Today, let's see, Andre, it's June 26th. Welcome, everybody, to the Security in 45 show. Andres, summer has started. Kids home from school. It's super hot here in North Carolina. I know that's going to make you laugh a little bit there. I know my North Carolina temperatures are like winter for you Florida people. But I hope everyone's having a terrific week. And today we're going to have a great conversation on Zero Trust. Zero Trust, topic everybody certainly needs, even if they don't realize it.
Exactly, yeah. And it's interesting because we hear a lot about Zero Trust every day. We hear, what is Zero Trust? What does it do? Is it a framework? Is it a deployment? Is it something that we say, for example, a lot of components, things that, we have already in an environment, and the reality is that Zero Trust is not a product, and we'll talk about that today. I know, Mike, we were talking about it earlier. We're super excited to have two super rock stars guests in our show today, and let me introduce you to them. We have Stefania, and then we also have Neil, and I would like to give them some time just to make sure they introduce themselves and we get to know them a lot more. I'll give it to you, Stefania.
Thank you. Well, I'm Steph. I am a TSS security engineer. I specialize in security. I've worked in Cisco, not as many years as all these guys over here, but I've been here my fair share of years. I'm based in Mexico City, and I'm happy to help answer any questions that you may have.
My name is Neil Lovering. I've been with Cisco for a little more than 20 years. I've been doing this networking thing for probably three decades or so since I got out of the military. Had a CCIE for almost all of that 30 years out there, and just happy to be here and have fun. Chat. Thanks.
That's awesome. Steph and Neil, I'm really looking forward to this conversation with you. Neil, you've got such a wealth of experience and you're a constant learner. I think it says a lot when we were talking earlier, and I pointed out your CCIE number 1772, and you still continue to get certified. And I made a joke about, hey, does that, are you using your grandfather in at that point? And you said, no, I would call that quitting. I remain certified. So I think that says a lot. And Steph, you've got a really interesting background in software engineering. We're real similar with that. I know that's how you got into Cisco originally. So both of you just have great perspectives for today's topic on Zero Trust, and let's just jump right into it. Zero Trust, probably something that a lot of people have heard of, and some people are on that Zero Trust journey. Neil, for you, to start off the first question, I'll throw it your way. Where does the Zero Trust terminology come from? Why was this term even invented?
Why was it invented? It's hard to do why questions. I've tried to avoid those for most of my life out there. But really, the concept of Zero Trust came out a little bit more than 20 years ago, actually. They kind of started that kind of as a way of trying to define a better or closer concept of security, kind of saying that individual users or devices or users with their devices should only have access to the applications or the resources that they need to, and everything else is kind of a deny all policy. And security folks have tried to build worlds like that where you only have permit lists. And of course, those are usually met with catastrophic failures because you have no idea what the world is going to offer up or where you need to go in today's world out there. So those definitions have evolved and merged and grown over the years too. We pointed out with lots of different sessions at Cisco Live and stuff, if you have ever a chance to go. But it's important to understand that vendors themselves should never be the ones who dictate to anyone out there, this is what Zero Trust is. Vendors are the participants. They bring the products, the capabilities, the engineering aspects to helping you achieve those Zero Trust goals. But Zero Trust is an industry concept out there. It's really important to remember, I think.
That's so true. I think that's something people forget is that it's not one vendor that created it. It is an industry, and it each company is going to approach it in a different manner there.
Yeah, and the other thing is that you see a lot of, and I love this show already because we're not just biased or one one technology or one vendor, things like that. This is like a general thing, right? We have many different things. We have many different definitions of zero trust. Many companies already have their own version of that, and just the main idea is just to try to get into a common place where we can say, hey, this is a good starting point. So this is already really good.
And
Now,
so I was just gonna say, and it's named correctly. Like, of all the confusing terminology we use, this is something that's actually named correctly. I'm giving you zero trust until you can prove otherwise to get onto the network.
which itself is kind of a challenge if you think about it. If Mike, if you and I have absolutely zero trust, then there's nothing we can do to ever become friends or to get at least a little bit of knowledge or insight or the ability to grow a friendship. So there has to be a little bit of give or take when you start that process of introduction to then take that relationship and flourish it. And that's exactly what zero trust is. Maybe there's a growth of over time, you get better and more access because what we know about you and your device is actually improving, right? Or that could change in a heartbeat too, you know.
Very good point. Very good point. Yeah, and in terms of changing in a heartbeat, yeah, we talk about zero trust being like you can have a retrospective alert or something like that, where you could maybe have your trust revoked or diminished in a way as well. So, great call out.
So many different ways, ramifications in the zero trust. So I'm excited about this. And Steph, I do have the next question for you. Just if you don't mind, just name like an everyday example of zero trust and what is not, what it is, and anything that you can tell us about it.
Well, everyone enforces a certain level of zero trust in their day-to-day life. Even if we don't notice it, we are doing it. For example, almost everyone here surely has some sort of social media. So when you go online and you configure your social media accounts, when you accept a friend, you are giving them access to the things you post, the things you think. So you can start giving them access. And even in your social media, you can start configuring so only your closer friends can have access to very specific posts that you make or very specific things that you say. So you can start giving these granular access to different levels of yourself that you have posted in social media. Now, we talked before that all of you here are parents, all of your dads. So another good example here is the parental controls that you can have in your devices at home. You don't want your kids to access every single site online because not everything is age appropriate. So you have these controls so your kids are safe online. And you can even say, okay, you are allowed to go to these videos on YouTube, you are allowed to go to these games, and that's it. Because not everything online is safe. So you can give this le different level of access and this different level of controls to your kids.
That is a really good analogy. I actually have a lot of fun blocking stuff here in my house with my kids. Don't know, you
It's
guys.
funny too that the example that Steph gave, it's little things like that in life that we might already be doing and not really thinking about applying to something as geeky as like a zero trust. And then when you actually go to work and you start doing zero trust, you can't figure out where to start or what to do, right? But you're already kind of doing that. It's just a mentality or a focus point or an individual concept. And that's exactly what Steph was talking about there with friends and family, right?
So
Yeah, it
true.
sounds, it is like a fundamental thing, like getting to know somebody, sharing some information about, you know, in this case with the social media example, it's absolutely true. I never thought about this.
Yeah, we are all doing it in some way or another with maybe just as part of common sense, throughout our daily lives. So that was a great example. I like that one because it kind of relates stuff to everyday things that we're all doing. Neil, what about same question for you, an example of zero trust, but this time being related to the nerdy aspect of it in our industry and kind of the security networking industry. Any common examples or use cases of zero trust that we may find out there in the industry?
We kind of see it happening a lot in today's world if you think about it. You might actually trip across it just when you access your bank account information. as annoying as it might sound, you get some multi-factor or your phone goes off or you have to check an email and type in a code or something like that. So that's kind of a concept of, if not an absolute application of zero trust. So again, it's you and your device, or maybe specifically more you and you happen to have a device accessing one particular application. Obviously, it doesn't give you access to the entire banking industry. It doesn't give you access to online shopping lists. It doesn't give you access to free movies or downloads. It's the banking activity, that one thing. So I think that's a really interesting example. And there's multiples of those in today's world out there. In your networking environment, folks might set up an example of when I want to log into a server or something, there's only a defined list of people who are allowed access to this. That's kind of zero trusty in a way, that Mike and Neil can get there, but Andres can't. But Andres has access to the super awesome server out there that no one else can get into. So is that zero trust? Maybe, maybe not. It just depends on how you look at the definitions of that. But again, if you're providing individual control or access methods to something that exists out there, that's kind of zero trust by all of the basic definitions out there. Some vendors, again, might not have a solution unless they don't consider it that. But remember, vendors aren't making the definitions here.
Like that idea, and it's important for the segmentation because, yeah, with that example between Andres and I, with access to different, Andres has an example to maybe one part of a server that I don't. If my part does get compromised, it's not going to essentially, or it might not affect his part as much. And it certainly is a good way to separate the roles. I can still log in just enough to do my job. I don't really need access to Andre's part of the server to do my job, and that's really limiting a lot of risk right there.
And that's another thing that I believe it helps a lot with, understanding what the whole zero trust idea is. I know, from the industry we hear things, let's say for example, like zero trust network access or application access or other things that they mention, and it just makes like that segmentation is also part of it, and I think it takes us to a really good place, or that common place that I was talking about earlier on the zero trust. So pretty cool.
You bring up some interesting points there too, Andres, the concept of zero trust network access or zero trust application access. I think some people don't have enough time on their hands or too much time on their hands. They keep coming with more and more acronyms for our lives out there. But it's kind of also showing us that the concept of zero trust can be applied to various things, and zero trust can have controls at multiple places out there. It's not just the user and the endpoint and the iPhone in your hand and the application in the cloud. If you have access to and your environment has a network, then use the network. That can give you controls and visibility and segmentation if you want. So there's all kinds of things that can help you reach those targets of what zero trust is in your definition or the protection, profiles that you really want.
I imagine the larger a company grows and the larger the threat landscape gets, more important zero trust essentially becomes because you've got all these different avenues of potential attack there. I will be
Yeah, and you
curious
see
about,
that in, sorry, Mike. And you see that now with our customers moving to Amazon Web Services and they need to extend their policies there as well. It's a growing beast.
I will be, and I do have a question I'll ask one of you later about best way to maybe get started on something like that. I mean, that seems like a massive undertaking. So I will be curious your thoughts. Maybe if we have some time for that, I'll be curious where you would start on a huge project like that.
Yeah, we'll get to that one for sure. And actually, I do have the next question for you, Stefan, and this one is more oriented to the technology, the way that we implemented things that, for example, what are the tools that we can leverage to start implementing something like zero trust today?
You will hear this a lot today, but zero trust is it's a journey. So starting to adopt technologies and tools, well, it could be challenging at the beginning, but we need to start somewhere. I've seen with my clients that what they need the most at the beginning, it's an MFA. We cannot rely only on users and password anymore. This is very risky nowadays. We have malware actors that have so many techniques to be able to break a password that relying only on them, well, it's just not the best route anymore. And well, our users don't help either. We have users that leave their password in Post-its, that they just save it in the notes of their phones. This is just not very safe. And nowadays, it's very common that we have password administrators that like LastPass, and they have their own level of risk themselves. So we cannot just rely on this to be able to give them access to our sensitive information. We need more. We need more layers. So with this extra layer with an MFA, we can be at least more certain that this user is who they say they are. Another basic step that we can take on this journey is a basic one is having endpoint protection. Your security products may fail, your firewall may not look at that malicious file, and well, having this last line of defense is always great for having protection on your endpoints. And well, again, a very essential pillar in your security journey. And as you guys said, the segmentation is essential. We need to start limiting access to all of our resources, to all of our users. Maybe if you ask your questions to yourself, like, am I going to allow this random user to access this finance document that has very sensitive information from their personal iPad? Maybe not. Maybe they don't need access to that. Maybe if they are accessing from a corporate device that has the antivirus in place, that has the adequate operating system, that has less vulnerabilities, maybe then if I implement my DLP engine and I know if this user is trying to send this sensitive finance document through their personal Gmail account, maybe with those layers and layers of protection, maybe then I can give them access to this very sensitive document. But yeah, it's Zero Trust is beyond checking if my user is saying who they say they are, is checking credentials, it's checking if they are using the correct device and if they actually have access to that very specific resource.
Yeah, you actually bring a really good point on that, on the segmentation and the category where, like, for example, in this finance file or server or anything. Just, and I think it's something that gets overlooked, most of the cases, is just make sure that you categorize your data, sensitive data, like what's critical, what's not, and things like that. So I think that brings up a really good point on that.
It's great, Steph, too. You pointed out, there's layers of security here. That concept's been around for a while. DoD in the U.S. had, defense in depth for forever out there. Jokingly, ogres are filled with layers. So said Shrek out there. But the multiple concepts of overlapping technologies and capabilities is what really is going to drive our security solutions today.
Yeah, without a doubt. And Steph, I like the aspect you mentioned, which was the device itself, because I don't know. Do you guys feel like a lot of times that gets overlooked? I see a lot of emphasis on doing, they'll get that MFA check in place, and yeah, you are the correct user, but then we forget some of the basics about the device you're on. Yeah, it's great. You are absolutely the trusted user that we want to have on the network, but you're on an infected BYOD device, for example. So I think that's a huge component. All right. So this was a big one for me, this next question, Neil, because where do you start? And kind of, is there a recommended approach? If I'm listening in on this conversation we're having right now, and hey, this is something I need to get a grip on, and my manager wants me to start designing a zero trust implementation for our company. Any recommended advice you have based on what you've seen out there in terms of where to start?
That's a great question because it's a difficult process to say that there's a one size fits all here. Steph threw out some great examples of some of the technologies that are almost necessary or seem to be represented in parallel with zero trust and multi-factor authentication, for example. That might be a quick win. It's not too difficult to get that up and running. Cisco had it rolled out across their entire global network in a matter of weeks for the most part. So it's maybe it's because Cisco is full of a bunch of smart people too. But that concept is something that could be actually adopted and consumed quite well. Using that other thing out there, maybe from your perspective as someone who needs to roll out zero trust or get an understanding of it, do you have any pain points right now? Do you have any problems? Look at that as a place to implement some tools or have some conversations around. Oftentimes, too, zero trust is probably going to involve just more than you, the security person. It might involve the switching folks, the wireless folks, the AD folks, the cloud folks. Do you have conversations with these guys? If not, why? Why not? Have a cup of coffee, get some conversations going, because when you start implementing these corporate-wide, these campus-wide, these customer-wide security enablement technologies out there, it's going to touch a lot of folks, not just your desk or you're the security team out there. So I think the biggest thing out there, again, if you want some quick wins, you can easily do that. Find where it hurts right now or what's being pushed down upon you and do that. But in the longer run out there, build some friendships, get some coordinations going. And you could be the jack of all trade, figure out what you're going to do today as far as taking small little bite-sized pieces off that elephant.
That's a really good point. Yeah, because if you're designing something on that large of a scope, that's a great point about communicating and making those friendships with other people in your organization, because they might be seeing, you mentioned pain points. They might be having pain points that maybe I have not had. So what are those pain points? And maybe that would be a great way to start the journey is just, hey, let's get back a bunch of time savings because this one particular event keeps happening, and maybe some basic segmentation is where to start. I like that.
I think it will vary from client to client. If we talk to a small company, there is one guy who's the network guy, the security guy, the AD guy. So he's having conversations with himself. So yeah, I don't think there's like a blueprint for every single customer we have, but yeah, start somewhere and start making a plan for your security journey, of course.
That's a good point, Steph, is do something. Don't sit around waiting until you have the complete plan. Because if you take that approach, you're never going to start. You're never going to have the full plan. And there's always things that are going to change out there. Do something. You're flying an airplane. You can't go from here, I'm in Herndon, Virginia, to Los Angeles on a straight line. The plane's going to duck and dodge and go up and down all over the place because that's just what it does. It's making your life easy as a passenger out there. Do something. Start somewhere. Never stop.
Yeah, and another thing that I'm thinking of that also applies on where to get started is, again, on identifying what are the things that we're securing, right? And that is, I think, one of the biggest starting points for zero trust. Like, where do we start applying those security controls? And that makes a lot of sense, I guess.
Kind of identifying like the important assets and getting the inventory part of it.
Yeah, the visibility, right? And I heard this one a lot over the time. Like, you cannot secure what you cannot see. I don't know if you guys have heard that one, and it's on point. Now that I see, where can everybody can get started? That's good. All right. So, you guys are making this too easy. So
Hey,
you're
you know what's
making it.
funny? On this topic, we've only mentioned where we work with, Cisco like 2 times. So that shows you that this is a vendor agnostic concept, as Neil mentioned on the very first question. So pretty cool.
Yeah, it makes a lot of sense. I like this. I want to, and Steph, I think the next question is gonna be for you. And let me see my notes here. Hopefully, I don't lose this one. Yes. So I've heard, like, I know I've delivered for a lot of my customers zero trust workshops inside here in Cisco. One of the things that we talk about is frustrate the attackers, not the users. So if you don't mind just talking a little bit about that high productivity versus the strong security paradigm, that would be good to hear.
Yeah, well, I think we need balance between security and usability. For example, if we talk again about the MFA, when we are implementing the second factor, we recommend, of course, choosing a method that it doesn't have like a big learning curve for our users. Maybe choose something they already know how to use. It could be, for example, biometrics. They already know how to use the fingerprints for accessing their phone, for maybe their laptop. So if you choose that method that they already know how to use, it won't be as annoying as find your hardware token and use it. Or if, let's send a code to your mess to your phone and you type the message and now you can access. So if we can make this easier for our users, this can help them a lot with these new tasks that they now have to do every day. We can also implement technology that is hidden. They don't really know we are there checking their posture because this is a hidden agent that we have, but we are checking it. We know you're using, that you have the antivirus running. We know, you don't know that we know, but we know. We can implement, for example, an RBI, you know, with our executives. Executives are known for wanting to be able to access every single site that they want. They don't want to be blocked. They are executives and they want to access everything. So with this technology, we are able to say, okay, go wherever you want, but in a safe way, because they are going to the site. For them is the same experience, but it's not really the same site. It's this rendered image of the site. So this kind of technology is very user-friendly. For them is the same experience as before, but now you can sleep at night knowing that they are protected. And well, another thing I can think about is consistency. If we can provide this consistency, whether they are in the office or at home, and they don't have to guess if they can access the application using the VPN or not, or from their personal device or not, this can help a lot our users to have this same experience every single time.
That use case that you mentioned about the executives wanting to bypass the security, so spot on. I'm pretty sure that it's resonating with a lot of the people that it's on this call, just because it is so true. Like, I don't know how many times when I used to be, you know, in operations long time ago, I remember hearing this, like, yeah, you guys are implementing security and things like this, but, you know, I cannot access my XYNC website. So yeah,
pretty important. And I like the consistency part is nice. Like having a consistent way as the user, where when I log in, it's the same way every time. And we think about like single sign-on, for example. When I authenticate into the network, I do it one time and it's always the same. And I don't need to remember, I need to authenticate in this particular way for this particular application. I like the hidden part of that stuff because, yeah, it's great. If I can have my, we were talking about scanning the device earlier, if I can do all that, I don't need to manually worry about any of that or even be aware it's coming on. I heard this analogy. It was here from someone in Cisco about, you know, you shouldn't have to understand like the piping to get to where you want to go in the network. You know, there's all these pipes connecting everything. And I, as the user, shouldn't really have to know or understand that or be aware of that. But through like proper segmentation, it's really nice to frustrate an attacker who would have to figure that out or have to start thinking about, oh, they have this company has really good segmented role-based access. And I have compromised an account and I'm in a small little area, the small little segment, but they've made it very difficult for me to get outside of the segment. So very difficult for the attacker, but very easy for the user who's just wanting to do their job there.
Segmentation is an interesting term there, Mike, too, because it's not the packets that you have to worry about, it's the people who originate those packets and the targets that they're eventually trying to get to. So if the network or the access is setting up those channels or those swim lanes, then you're destined to not be able to get to where you need to go or not execute the protocol of the port when you eventually hit that destination that you are allowed to at least reach. You can knock on the door, but you can't go through the door, so to speak, or have an analogy from that perspective. So all that falls into that concept of segregation or separation or segmentation, whatever term you prefer across there. And that would certainly help that concept of thwarting or frustrating those attackers. You know, they get into the network, but they're only allowed to go left. They can never get to the right-hand side of things, right? Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. And basic MFA, yeah, that's a frustrating way for an attacker. Great, I've compromised the username and password. But Steph, you mentioned, MFA being a nice way to start if you're not sure where to start on the journey of zero trust. And man, that's pretty frustrating to an attacker not being able to log in when you have the username and password. Neil, what do you see where people like mess up zero trust? I've got my plan and I'm doing my plan and it's just not working. Do you see any common, hey, this is the reason why individuals are kind of messing up their attempt at zero trust?
That's funny you say that. I just thought of one. So this was not part of any of our previous discussions out there. But when you bring up the concept of MFA, it's absolutely necessary. And Steph had some great examples or reasons for that. But when you look at zero trust, you have different pain points, as I suggested before, or different topics that you need to address immediately. But they're not a one and done. You have to think about at what level do I need to do that? Is it simply because I'm trying to impress somebody, or someone said you must do that, check the box, and I'm done? Or I need to get it done, I'll do something else, and I'll come back, I'll make it even better. And we're people, we're humans. We like to always make things better out there. How much better do you need to make it? Do you have to climb to the absolute top of the mountain, make it the best, most bulletproof system ever? Maybe not, but maybe a little bit better than ordinary. So the MFA example in this case might be, if I have a yes, no button on my phone, okay, I did it. I'm going to click yes. But there's a zillion documented cases out there of MFA fatigue. People's phones would go off and they'd just click yes. They had no idea where it came from, but I was told to click yes when it went off. So I just kept clicking yes. And number of networks that were compromised because of that are uncountable out there. So now in today's world, it's not MFA proof, but it's a little bit more unlikely to be tampered with is if there's a code that shows up on the screen and then your phone says, here's the code. Well, if you're not the one who asked for it, you might ask yourself, why is my phone telling me to type in a code? And then if you're not the one who has the screen in front of you, where would I even type in this code? So the two will never connect. So at least that's one example. So there's MFA, and then we're climbing the rope a little bit or climbing the stairway to get better MFA. And that's one tool of how many might exist across here. So that might be an example, Mike, of how one could not so much mess it up, but you could be better than. It's not just a checkbox for the sake of doing something, it's making sure you get it right.
So, Neil, to that point, is zero trust something that we want to continuously examine as time goes by, like our own zero trust policy, or is it a set it and forget it? Sounds like it
I'd
would be something
suggest
we.
that people hate to hear the concept, but any type of security solution, whether you want to use the term zero trust with it, or you're just applying an ACL to a router or a firewall out there, it's something you want to revisit over time because, I look beyond the screen here and I see the outside world that's constantly changing out there. So there's always new approaches, new vectors, there's new vulnerabilities that happen on the gear that we use all the time. So you need to adjust for that. And if you're not willing to circle back and think about that or adjust your security policy or patch the operating systems, upgrade things, buy new devices, that's all part of that refresh, that circle back aspect of things, then you're making yourself more open to attack by not doing that. And zero trust kind of calls that out. But that concept's been around forever out there.
Yeah, that's a really good point. I mean, you were just bringing me back to like my TAC days when we were having conversations about moving off of like triple DES into AES, for example. It's like if you weren't revisiting that, you'd still be on an older algorithm that's gonna get hacked. So yeah,
Yep. Even triple
so.
DES is getting to that point of being on the edge and should consider moving forward. And, elliptical curve or, quantum and all that stuff is coming in today's world, right? So, doesn't stop.
To
your
Right.
point, Neil, I have heard too many times from customers, especially with email security, if I just set it up, I can forget about it. No, you cannot just forget about your email security. You have to continuously feed these products. So yeah, I've heard that a lot.
It's called zero trust, not zero work. I wish for the latter, of course, but yeah, no, and it is so true. There's always like that constant improvement, and you hear also out there the attackers are just getting better, and the only need to be right once, And it is a constant battle between defenders and the attackers and making sure that we get it right. And I know, Neil, I'm gonna go over a little bit of what you just mentioned about just checking those boxes. Yes, I see it happening a lot with financial institutions that, hey, we need to have network controls, right? Network access control. We need to make sure that we know, and they just buy the solution and don't implement it. So that is maybe another example of what we see there. So.
Or to your point, Andres, someone buys a firewall because someone said they need to and it's secure, and then they put a permit any statement at the bottom. I would call that a router. I don't care what little sticker on the outside of the box says, right?
Yes, so
Put a
true.
very expensive paper. What is it
Yeah,
called?
layer three gateway is
Paper
what it
wall.
turns into at that point, yeah.
Yes. Oh boy, I've seen those a lot. Yeah. Awesome. I know we're getting close to, and I think this is the final question we have. And this one's for you, Steph. We hear a lot of the technologies, we hear a lot of about zero trust, but and even though we talked about how to get started, where to get started, but what about, and this one's more specific to Cisco use cases. What do our customers say, for example, get started, they need help, they want to see how we can help them, where we would take them to?
Well, as I said too many times today, security is a journey. It's a never-ending process where when you think you are fully protected, there's a new kind of attack that is released into the wild and you have nothing in place. But if you feel you can be in a better place in regards to your zero trust journey in your company, a good way to start is reaching us. We can help you develop a plan. We can help build the correct strategy for you. And if you already have some pieces of the puzzle already in place, of course, you can contact your account team and we can help you find some areas of improvements that you may have.
That's
That's
excellent. I
good.
know one thing that comes to mind is, yeah, those zero trust workshops. That's a kind of a fun way to learn zero trust. And then the Cisco blueprints. I think that's kind of a cool way to see little details about areas that maybe I want to get started in a particular area, Neil, a particular pain point or something like that.
I think
So I guess that
those
reach
open
out
up
to your
questions too, also, Mike, to your point, is you can have these very generic conversations that happen to be and produce these nifty little documents at the end, or you have a lab environment that maybe you explore something you've never seen before, and that might open a door that you never even thought about before. You didn't think about the need for this product or this capability. You never had this picture come back that had a couple of red dots on it. You thought your life was full of green environments. Everything was great, right? So, being honest and having these type of conversations can now lead to a more secure environment. Absolutely. You just have to, be willing to have those conversations.
kind of like the MFA thing that you brought up, Neil. Like people might not be aware until they see it in a lab that, hey, you can do like a verified push with the codes on the screen. Like, wow, I didn't know that was an option. So, yes, spurring that conversation and learning.
And I was gonna mention some of that too. I think, and we'll make sure we put it on the community post that we do after the episode. But I'm sure we do have those zero trust workshops, and there's a lot more information. There's one that it's very hands-on gear or the software, and the other one is more like on the planning and the strategy behind it. So that'll be a good thing to bring up.
So we've got a whole lot of people on the call and everyone's dying to hear like a good dad joke. So now
You go, Mike, and that'll burn up our last minute, so.
if we go a little bit over, that'll be okay. And I really want to hear what you've got to say, Neil and Steph, on yours. Tell you what, do you want me to go first?
I do want you to go first. Yeah.
Okay. Mine, I was having trouble thinking of a good zero trust dad joke, but it did occur to me that I kind of had something funny happen when I was talking with my two sons who are 7 and 8. And I was, they were like, "Hey, Dad, what's the Security 45, about?" And I said, "Well, we're going to be talking about this thing called zero trust." They were like, "Dad, what is that? What is zero trust?" And I said, "Well, it's kind of like, how Dad has a the truck, and I have to have a driver's license that allows me to drive a vehicle, but I have to have a key that makes it so I can just drive that specific truck." And they said, "Okay, I think I got it. I think I got it." And I said, "And if I were to do something bad, I could get like my ability to drive the truck taken away." And they said, "Oh, like a speeding ticket." And I said, "Yeah, like a speeding ticket." And they go, "Well, Dad, I don't have any speeding tickets. Can I drive the truck?" And I said, "Well, you guys, you don't have the license or like the key to get to the truck." So the next morning I woke up and they had like a de they woke me up. They had a key that they made out of cardboard and a little driver's license with the little picture that they had, created on their own. And they're like, "Dad, we're good to go. I don't have any tickets. I got this license. I got this key." And I said, "Well, guys, it's got to be from a trusted source, like a DMV." And then I said, "You know what? Let's just go. You can sit on my lap and we'll just drive around the block one time." So.
I love that one. That actually encompasses everything zero trust.
Real life examples, of zero trust. Steph, why don't you go next? What do you got for
Oh
us?
no. Well, of course I can go. It just can go better from here. It's a very bad joke, but I found it online. Why don't the zero trust policies make friends easily?
Zero trust policies make friends easily.
Because they don't trust anyone, not even for a bite.
What we were talking about. There's got to at least be a little trust to get somewhere. Okay, I like it.
I'll admit I'll fail on the joke part. I'm not a big joke person, and I haven't had kids like you do, Mike. You're still lucky to have kids at home. Mine are grown. My youngest is 27, so I haven't thought of dad jokes for quite some time out there. So I try to have fun all the time and make joke about everything in life, but to carry a joke on is a hard thing for me to
Understood. It
do.
is. Yes, it is. That's why I couldn't even think of one, and I was just like, okay.
Yours is more of a live example, which is actually really good,
Exactly.
actually. So I liked it.
Exactly.
Yeah,
Thank you.
there's no topping off that one. I do have a very silly one, and this, like, all of them are terrible, but yeah, this one is good, I think. How does Zero Trust order coffee? You guys know?
It's like with like creamer that has like 0% fat or something.
No, it says here, I don't trust anyone, I'll brew myself.
Very nice, very nice.
So I must be a zero trust coffee person then, so.
There you go. There you go. Well, this has been so much fun. I would love to hear Neil and Steph if you have any closing thoughts about today's conversation. Steph, I'll kick it over to you first.
Just keep in mind that security, as we've said, is it's a journey. It's step by step. Don't rush. Don't just buy the or see the first thing you see. Oh, okay, I need this. I will implement this now. No. See your options, see what the thing that fits the best to your company. Of course, we're Cisco, but if there's something out there that makes more sense to you, go for it. The idea here is that you are well protected and step by step, don't rush. I think that will be the best way to start. It's easy. Don't rush.
To follow on what Steph was saying, is you're doing something. You're not sitting around thinking about doing something or continually in the planning process. You're always doing something, and the plan's going to change. The plan's going to get better. The plan's going to adjust. You might find something that doesn't work, but you're doing something. You're always taking a step forward or two steps forward and half a step back. There's always forward momentum.
Great, great. My takeaways, we started off, Neil, you talking about zero trust being an industry topic, not something that was created by a vendor. I really like Steph that you pointed out that we have zero trust in our everyday lives. You gave that social media account. I'm like, that's resonating with me, with kids watching YouTube and stuff, for example. And then, Neil, you got into zero trust in the industry. Yeah, something that every company does need. And some specific use cases of zero trust in the environment. And then, of course, we talked about implementing it using the technology and the tools. Steph, you thought a good one might be doing some MFA with the, verification of the user and the device. And then, Neil, you touched a little bit on the segmentation and the concept of it's not just zero work, as Andre said, but we're gonna analyze it as we go, not just forget about it, but stay on top of the game and make sure that we're at least more secure than maybe the competitors right around us. We do not want to be that easy target. Great stuff.
That's great stuff. And for my takeaways team, what I really like and I always like about zero trust and the conversation is the strategy. Just making sure that you identify those things that you want to make sure are secure. You make sure that you want to make sure that you have a roadmap of what you want to do. Keys into zero trust. Making sure that high productivity versus strong security is well thought of. And remember, we're not trying to we're trying to frustrate anything that wants to come at and attack us. We don't want to frustrate our users. So just eliminating that friction. And just what are the things that takes to get to zero trust right? We had some examples. Neil, you gave really good examples about what do we see there? And the last thing is just make sure that there's help out there. From we're biased on where we work at, but if you want to learn more about zero trust strategy, where to get help, feel free to reach out, and we'll do our best to make sure that that will help out.
And Andres, I'll add that we're biased, of course. We're all working for Cisco and we sell security stuff, but there's no vendor on the planet who can solve every zero trust question and every zero trust challenge you might have out there. So it's going to be a multi-vendor approach. And I only say that because if you turn the coin over and there's a vendor that says, "We got this, just buy our stuff and you're totally covered," then that's the first person you walk out the door. And that's certainly not anyone on this call. So.
Great points. Great points. Well, Neil and Steph, it has been an absolute pleasure. I do want to personally thank you guys for all the good you do in the world with Zero Trust. You're helping a lot of people through this call and through the work you do every day. So much appreciation for you guys taking the time to join Andres and myself today.
Oh, happy to be
Next
here.
call, July 24th. Andres, I believe that's our AI conversation. That one's going to be cool because it's not about AI, it's about the security of AI because AI is great until it gets hacked. So we had a great conversation today on Zero Trust. Neil, Steph, thank you again. Andres, I will see you on the next one. Stay secure, everybody, and we'll see you on the next show.
Thank
Thank you,
you. Have
guys.
a good
Bye,
one.
guys. Take care.